Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Teach Outdoors podcast. I'm your host, Lauren McLean, and today's episode is all about how to take our curriculum outside. Before we dig in, I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the unceded and traditional territories we each find ourselves on today. For me, I live on Heritage Mountain in Port Moody, British Columbia. To the east of me is the Golden Ears Provincial Park, and when I look to the west, I see the Burrard Inlet, which feeds into the Pacific Ocean. This is the land of the Kwikwetlem First Nations. Welcome to Teach Outdoors, the podcast that brings you inspiration and ideas for taking your teaching outside. Together, we'll explore the benefits of learning outside the classroom, share tips and tricks for successful outdoor teaching, and hear from educators who are making a difference in the lives of their students through outdoor experiences. Join us as we dive into the world of teaching outdoors and discover new ways to engage and inspire the next generation. I'm Lauren McLean, mother of two young ones, author of Me and My Sit Spot, teacher, and outdoor classroom enthusiast. I'm grateful to be living, learning, playing, and raising my family on the traditional and unceded lands, waters, and skies of the Kwikwetlem First Peoples. We have an amazing guest with us today, Rachel Tidd. She is the author of Wild Learning, Practical Ideas for Bringing Teaching Outdoors, and The Wild Math, and Reading Curriculums. She is passionate about integrating the outdoors and natural materials in core academic areas such as reading and math. Prior to founding Wild Learning, Rachel gained extensive teaching experience as an elementary and special education teacher and through homeschooling her own two children. She is a doctoral student in educational sustainability at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point and holds a master's degree in elementary and special education from Bank Street College of Education. You can find her at discoverwildlearning.com and on Instagram and Facebook at discoverwildlearning. Hi, Rachel. Thank you so much for connecting with me.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here and talk with you today. I'm on my favorite subject of all things.
Mine too. It's perfect. Would you like to further introduce yourself and tell us a bit more about your background in outdoor learning?
Sure. So like you said, I'm Rachel Tidd, and I'm author of the new book, Wild Learning, Practical Ideas to Bring Teaching Outside. And I first got started in outdoor learning when my kids went to Forest Preschool. They're tweens and teens now, so it's a while ago. Yeah, they both are really different kids and they both really thrived outside. And my youngest in particular had pretty significant sensory needs. Mm-hmm. And when we were having him evaluated at 3 and 4, right, in preschool, I brought the paperwork to the teachers to have them fill out the scales for the evaluation. And they thought I was nuts. So, and I was like, wait, we're pulling your hair out. I'm a special educator. I'm like not making this up. Like this is a problem at home. Right. And they said, well, we have no issues here. And, you know, through the evaluation process, we really felt the occupational therapist really felt that it was because the outdoor environment was meeting his sensory input needs in a way that the other environments were not. And it makes sense to now, you know, we think about it. You're allowed to bounce on a log and hang from a tree and play on the ice and dig in the snow and balance on logs, right? And if you're an input seeker, yeah, that's going to make a huge difference. And so he was lucky in that I was already homeschooling my oldest and he's the youngest. So to me, I was like, okay, how am I going to, you know, you can't stay in preschool forever, unfortunately. Wouldn't that be lovely? And I knew I'd have to teach him to read and do math, right?
Right.
And I mean, I'm a big play advocate, but eventually this was going to happen and it was going to be my responsibility. And I knew that this was like a golden ticket. Like I had to figure out how to incorporate it. Mm-hmm. And when I looked around, what do you find? Lots of great science units.
Yep.
Especially for older kids. Lots of, you know, inquiry-based science investigations for younger kids. Fabulous stuff.
Yeah.
But you got to learn how to read and do math. And so I started with the math, and people in my homeschool community saw what I was doing and got really interested. Several people, a good friend of mine, urged me to write it down. I said no.
Oh, interesting.
I had two young kids. I was like, no one wants to see this. I'm just, you know, playing around in the woods. But eventually I did write it down, as informal as it was at the time. And it just grew in popularity. And then that same child has dyslexia and dysgraphia and dyscalculia. Mm-hmm. And so I went down the road of, reading and the science of reading and Orton Gillingham, how to teach that same child outside. How do you teach him to read? And so that's how Wild Reading came about.
That's amazing. I love hearing the personal stories in the background, because I mean, you can just hear it in your voice. There's so much passion behind it. I know we come from opposite ends of North America. So thank you for staying up. It sounds like our curriculum is very similar, where it's still based, the two foundations are numeracy and literacy. It's so important. So do you have experience with multiple grade levels of bringing numeracy and literacy outdoors, or is it typically with the younger students?
So I did, because I have two kids. So, mm-hmm. And I taught elementary and special ed, mostly special ed. I taught mostly first, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. And as my kids got older, I moved up and mm-hmm. wrote different levels. So Wild Math goes up to fifth grade. And then I've done level one and level two, which is like a grade two level reading. And a lot of units, but I am an elementary educator, so I haven't gone higher. In the demand, unfortunately, and I'm hoping this will change, and I'm seeing it a little bit. Nature-based education, outdoor learning is a early childhood thing here. It is very new to be doing this at all. If you can find, I know a few schools doing it, but I'm very envious of my Canadian neighbors that get out a lot more than I do, or teachers here seem to be able to do. And I'm hoping that the book helps to move that into a different direction.
So. Yes, absolutely. I think it definitely will. We love, every educator, parent loves a good book, especially ones that have such practical ideas like your book offers.
Yeah, that was really important to me when Wiley and Jesse Bass, the publisher, approached me about writing the book. They're like, what do you want to write about? Which really shocked me. And I was like, I don't know. I was really adamant that I wasn't going to write another book about school gardens. I love school gardens, but mm-hmm. I feel like they're a very privileged, small, most schools that I have ever worked at and know of around here just don't have them. And they don't have the funds to have them. And what do you do if you're in New York City? That's where I went for my graduate work, and I taught down there for a while. So I was really I said, I will only write this book if it's super practical. It has to be something that's going to give teachers a tool to teach what they're already teaching in a way that's outside. And I otherwise I wasn't going to write it. I was just like, nope, this is what I'm willing to do. And, cause there's a lot of great books out there that have already kind of covered that.
Well, and that's something that I definitely wanted to ask you, was because I can read it in your blog on your website that you always come at everything with an inclusive lens. And so I know for you, it's not about having a forested space to be outside. So do you have any examples of either literacy or numeracy where you're going outside in a variety of spaces?
I do. In fact, I decided to organize the whole book that way. A lot of nature books do it seasonally mm-hmm. or what things like that. But I did it by the schoolyard, out to the neighborhood, and then farther afield, and then in the classroom. Yeah. I spent a lot of time in that schoolyard because of my experience teaching in a super urban, I'm actually from a really rural places, but I taught some of my teaching experiences in an urban area, and where you only have the rooftop mm-hmm. playground, or they close the street off. or they have a schoolyard that's all paved, and it's, you know, it's only 20 feet the length of the building. And so it's a really different setting. There's pros and cons to both. And so things that I like to do in a paved schoolyard, I love chalk.
Yeah.
I love, you know, making your 10 frames with chalk, playing grammar games with chalk. There's so many. I have a whole chapter on chalk because I love chalk because it's cheap.
It is.
And you can do it anywhere. I take chalk here. We just moved, but I lived in the forest in our last house, and we didn't have any pavement. We didn't have any sidewalks. And so we would draw on the deck. We would draw on rocks. I would take chalkboards out with me. But then the best part about like a more urban, or if your school is in a town, like a village or a town like ours is here, you can use that environment because it's super literacy rich. Yeah. And so you can use, so I often give the example, it's weird, I don't have like a slide, but I often give the example, there's a picture I took outside of our public library of the 15 minute parking spaces. And it also says, it says no parking, you know, 15 minute spaces, you know, 15 minutes. And so I use that as an example of like what you could do on the spot. So 15 minutes is a rate. How many cars can park here in an hour? I have four spots. Now, how many cars, right? Now we've got multiplication. We have rates, which are a big sixth grade thing.
Yeah.
And then there's the words themselves. So parking is an AR, you know, an R controlled vowel. So, you know, how many other R controlled vowels can we find on the signs around here? You can mark up the word park, you know, you circle that R controlled vowel. Let's add it's parking. So it has a suffix on it. It has the K sound at the end, but it's not CK. There's just like so much you can do when you have text all over. And the best part is it's like real, it's like in context. It's real. It's not something we're making up. It's not some random sentence I wrote on the board. It's like a real context.
Yeah.
So they can make those connections. And I think it's a little bit more meaningful.
Well, and I love how your example also is one moment, but it's seeing all the curricular connections. So it's not saying that we have to have a numeracy lesson over here. Okay, tie it up, put in a box over here. Here's our literacy lesson.
Or sometimes I like to do walks. I do a lot with, I taught a multiplication class last fall. And we did a lot of walks through the neighborhood looking for arrays. We did a raise one day, and then we looked for things that came in groups on a different day. And the kids get so excited. The arrays especially are super fun to do in like a more developed place because they're everywhere. And they just got so excited. You know, they were on the sidewalk. They were on every pane of every window, the grates on the window, the textured, I don't know if some places have this. We have like little textured things. I think they're for like visually impaired people to tell them that that's the end of the, like the intersection,
the walkway,
the crosswalk.
Yep.
And they're dots and they're huge. It's like, I don't know. There were too many for them to figure out then, but we wrote it down and we went back and find, I thought it was like 15 by, I don't know, eight or something.
Yeah.
It was too much for them to figure out in the moment, but we kind of like took a picture and then we it back and remade it and kind of figured out how to section it, you know?
Yep. Well, and we've got, you know, manhole covers and those all have grates on it that we can do the arrays with. We often do choral counting examples with the flower petals because five is a very common number out in nature. And so
groups.
Five is 10.
Groups. Yeah. Groups are easy to do in either environment. Things that come in groups, you know, we found lots of plants and trees. I love street trees. I have a love affair with street trees because I feel like they're an underutilized, you know, anyone that lives in a place that has a lot of trees, you know, has that resource and they may or may not take advantage of it. But if you're in an urban environment, many people don't think about, well, you don't have to go super far, but these street trees are here. And they're often really interesting and intentionally planted and or historic. So, and there's like whole people's jobs to manage these trees. And they have a lot more variety than you might find in your local forest. I know when I went to New York City, maybe this is why I have a love affair for street trees. I was like, what's this tree? I have never seen this tree in my life. That's a weird thing living in the Eastern United States. It's deciduous forest. That's where I grew up. And I was like, what is this tree? I've never heard of this tree. And I like figured it out. It was a ginkgo tree, obviously. Oh. I didn't know what it was, but they were all over planted in New York City. And they're so cool.
They have the coolest shaped leaves.
Yeah. I was the nerdy teacher that like brought in piles of leaves in New York City and dumped them on my kids' desks. And because they didn't know what a forest was.
Yeah.
We actually had to go to the botanical garden, New York City Botanical Garden, to go to a forest. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fine. It's a different set of knowledge. I didn't know what the subway was. Yeah. They can ride the subway. It's a different set of knowledge. But yeah, so that was my trees are my street trees.
Very cool. Well, and so you have a variety of teaching in many different contexts and settings. So what are some overall challenges or barriers that you've had or experienced implementing outdoor education in traditional classroom settings?
Well, as a special ed teacher, you know, the kids that are runners, you in that kind of context, if I was to take the classrooms I've had in the past outside, you need you can't go by yourself. You need, you know, at least a teacher's aide and all the adults really you can muster. And if you can hook in your like speech pathologist or, you know, OT would be a great one. And it really, you really have to hammer in on practicing those routines and just going outside and really start small steps if you have that kind of situation. And have a plan in place if you do have kids that might take off, you know, and practice coming out, coming in to a signal or whatever, and like going as far as you can see me and comfortable. It's a lot. It is a lot.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth it. Yeah. The other thing is gear. I think it's two ways. I think as adults, we need to make sure that we have the correct gear, whether you're a teacher or a parent, or a parent's coming in to help. We often ignore ourselves. And I am very guilty of this. When I would go visit Forest Preschool, I didn't have the gear. My kid had gear, but I didn't have the gear. It's expensive. But I don't grow. I'm not going to grow out of my boots. So investing in myself is a good, you know, a good thing, and it'll last longer than my 3-year-old. And so I think it's okay to invest in good gear, good long underwear. You know, if you're in a cold climate like we do, I was just saying it's cold today. It's August. I have my wool on. Getting gear for kids can be difficult. I worked in some pretty low income schools, and there's ways around it. And I you know, a lot of gear libraries, garage sales can be fantastic. Donations, swaps, you know, there's a lot of ways around it. There's a lot of grants.
I've
heard people that you can get grants for kids' gear, but getting it for the teachers is a different story. That's
important. Yeah. And I know I've had students in the past that were runners, and we definitely went out with our teacher's aide. We went out with our student services teacher, and we started really small. The same way we start any routine indoors, we would go out very short periods of time at the beginning of the year. And all of our expectations or boundaries were all introduced through games. And so that's how we set up cones and play a game, then come back. Can we do the same game without the cones? Oh, no, we can't. All right, let's put the cones back out. No harm done. We'll just keep practicing and a lot of repetition. I know it can seem really mundane to take such slow steps, but it really does pay off.
Yeah, it makes a difference. And I know, at least in my experience, it can seem really repetitive to us, but it's not. necessarily repetitive to them. Yeah. My son loves and needs so much more repetition than I think is necessary most of the time. And I have to remind myself.
Yeah.
And it's just a trait I've noticed after working with a lot of different kids that we may think it's super repetitive, but you know, they really need even more repetition than we even think. And so, just keep going, keep trying. Yeah. Small steps. I love the game idea. That's great.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. It's been fun. I mean, as it's like, it's repetition, but it's through a different lens. And so it seems really playful.
Yeah. No, yeah. And that's a great way to do it. Keeps it super positive and fun for everyone else too, like all the other kids.
All right. I definitely want to ask you about assessment or documentation as well, because I know that's a big part with curriculum and parents or administrators thinking that you're wasting time outside and it's not attached to curriculum. So do you have any strategies or advice about how to assess or evaluate, document student learning with your nature-based lessons?
What I almost kind of think of it in a different way. So I kind of think about what you're already teaching and required to teach and how you can translate it. Or if you have a resources like my book or whatever you might have, you can match up those concepts. So like we were talking about, if you are teaching multiplication and arrays, then you're teaching multiplication and arrays outside. So there's really nothing different, right? Like I'm still teaching this, you know, core concept or this skill that I'm supposed to teach. I'm teaching it. Or instead of those plastic manipulatives you gave me, we're using pine cones, you know, and I take a ton of pictures so that I always have the proof.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. Some teachers like to do like have a clipboard and I don't know if you've ever seen this. So like if I had a class of 20 students, I'd have a sheet that I kind of like made. You know, with boxes, and you have every kid in your class's name in a box, and you're going around while they're working on an activity and you're talking with them and jotting down notes of what you observe, what they're doing, what they're having trouble with. And you keep that all together. And maybe you're focusing on one thing when you do that. Some days it might just be general observations. Mm-hmm. And then some days it might be, well, I'm going to look around everyone today while they're doing this specific activity, doing, I don't know, these multiplication problem cards or whatever that I have outside. And I'm going to see how each one of them is doing with their understanding of multiplication and kind of just write down really quickly where I think they are.
Yeah.
You know, and make a star next to who I think needs some more practice. I'm not a formal tester.
Well, and I think there's a lot to be said for balance. Even inside the classroom, we don't evaluate every single thing right. that the child says or draws or writes. And so it's finding a balance between conversations and work done, even just observing how they're engaging outside. And so I think, as you said, it's just finding that balance. Yeah,
the same things you might do in your classroom. If you do exit slips.
Yeah.
Or whatever you may call them, you know, the one final task that they have to do before they can go to the next thing. You can still do that outside. You can still do like written work outside.
Yeah.
In all but certain types of weather, right? Or in the chalk, you can take pictures of that, or they can take what they did with the chalk or the manipulatives and then draw it or write the number sentence or whatever they did or describe what they did with a partner. And then there's your documentation too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was just watching one of your YouTube videos on doing nature lines or number lines,
number lines.
And it's a wonderful routine indoors, and now we're taking it outdoors. It doesn't mean you have to assess it outdoors every single time again, but it's something that's consistent and predictable between indoors and outdoors, which I really love.
Right. Or you, I don't know, we did a lot with like 100 charts and I have a giant like class size cloth number chart or 100 chart that goes out. So if you're teaching a lesson on hundreds of charts and they're adding two digit numbers, and then you're coming back and you're talking about it, just like you would in on the carpet in your classroom. Yeah. You can do that outside with your big, you know, there's no, it's no different. These things can go outside. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Now, I know our time is wrapping up. So before I ask you for a novelty nature note, is there anything else you'd like to add about taking curriculum outdoors?
I did want to say that there's some research out there that I find really intriguing, that it doesn't even matter what you do outside. Mm. It's kind of just going. So even if you took your exact same lesson, you did absolutely nothing special, you never touched a pine cone, and you had a kid bring workbooks outside, nothing wrong with workbooks. I have a kid that loves workbooks. It's fine. And that's all you did. And then you came back. Mm-hmm. That they've shown that that still gives you a lot of the benefits of increased engagement, attitude, attention. And then it actually spills over into your next lesson. Yeah. So you're kind of getting a 2-for-1 deal.
Yeah.
And it's free. So like going outside is free. It's more work in the beginning a little bit, but mm-hmm. everything we do in the beginning in our classroom, we spend a long time working on procedures and getting kids, if you do centers or what we do during, well, I'm meeting with a small group, right? So yeah. we put in a lot of that work inside too. We just don't think of it in the same way.
That's true. Thank you for that. All right. So a novelty nature note, I'll quickly start. We have been observing a lot of water striders recently with my 4-year-old son asking so many questions about how they walk on water. So we've been learning all about how their legs are covered in just hundreds of tiny hairs, which trap the air to help keep them buoyant. And we also learned that they can actually live up to a year as long as the temperature is not freezing.
So my nature, you're ready for my maze. Yeah. So yeah, you know, I talked about trees, so I'm going to talk about trees some more. And I've been looking a lot at different leaf shapes, and there's a ton out there, but there's the simple and the compound. And then so the compound leaves have really long stems, and then they have all these smaller leaves, which most of us just think are leaves, mm-hmm. but they're actually leaflets. And that whole piece, so think of a locust or a black walnut, has a really long with all of the leaves on the either side and one on the end, or a horse chestnut or a buckeye. Yeah. I don't know if you have those in British Columbia, but they have like all their leaves come from the center, and there's usually 5 leaflets coming from the center and one long stem. And those are compound leaves. They're 2 different kinds of compound leaves. And I just think it's cool when you start noticing these differences.
Yeah.
And which trees have, you know, which ones are compound, which ones are palmate compound, but or regular palmate, like a maple leaf.
Yeah.
Looks like your palm, but then chestnut or buckeye is a palmate with each leaf coming from.
Very cool. Thank you so much. That's wonderful. Again, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. I encourage everyone to look up Discover Wild Learning, your website. There's so many great blog posts. And again, your YouTube videos are really easily accessible for educators and for parents. And you can follow her journey on Instagram, also at Discover Wild Learning.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Rachel Tidd. A last bit of fun information as we wrap up today's episode. I have a new workshop called Nature's Path, A Year of Monthly Sparks. If you visit my website, www.teachoutdoors.ca, you can find out more information. In essence, you receive 12 mini workshops that most schools are playing during their monthly staff meetings or during lunch and learn sessions. Each month, there are resources to download to help you get outside more easily, as well as some suggested podcast episodes to listen to. The other exciting update is that Rachel and I are doing a book giveaway next week, August 14th to the 18th, 2023. To enter, follow at Discover Wild Learning and at Teach Outdoors on Instagram. Like the post, tag your friends who love nature and books just as much as you do. The winner will be chosen Friday, August 18th. As we finish up, don't forget to send along your tips and strategies on how you incorporate literacy and numeracy outdoors by posting and tagging at teachoutdoors.ca. Don't forget to bookmark our website and subscribe to Teach Outdoors on YouTube. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Teach Outdoors podcast, where we explore the world of outdoor learning and play. Keep exploring, stay curious, and tune in for more adventures. I'll end with From the Trees song by Brandon Grant.
Start on my part, I look around to find a spot that I can call home for a while. Walking slowly, I feel so calm. I find a spot where nature opens up her arms for me to breathe. I see the stories I can learn from the trees, the feeling, the touch of gentle breeze, knowing the land around me brings me peace, watching the world around me sets me free. I feel the sunshine kiss my skin, I hear all of the birds singing from within. I get familiar with my space. I now know how every part fits in every place for me to breathe. I see the stories I can learn from the trees, the feeling, the touch of gentle breeze, knowing the land around me brings me peace, watching the world around me sets me. I go to visit in morning, in sunshine and the rain, to see what's different and notice the things that stay the same. I get to know my teacher, the spot that gives me health. To get to know the land is to get to know yourself. To breathe, I see the stories I can learn from the trees, the feeling, the touch of gentle breeze, knowing the land around me brings me peace, watching the world around me sets me free.